case number 86170, Adventure Photo Tours, Inc. versus Nevada Department of Taxation and Nevada Tax Commission. I should note that Justice Lee has recused herself from this particular case, so she won't be participating. Okay. And so as we've been doing the last couple months as sort of our experiment, each side will have 2 minutes of uninterrupted time at the beginning of your argument, and then it'll flow into the 15 minutes we've normally allocated to each side. So you'll get 17 minutes total per side. We'll refrain from interrupting those first 2 minutes. And counsel, would you like to reserve any time for rebuttal?
Yes, Your Honor. Joe Ralph, for the record, I'd like to reserve 5 minutes for rebuttal.
Okay, so as you know, I believe what will happen is when your time gets down to 5 minutes, the yellow light will come on and you'll hear the tone, but the clock will keep running, and if you're still standing there when it gets down to zero, you're out of time. And as respondent, similarly, when the time gets down to 5 minutes, you'll get the yellow light and the tone, but the time keeps running because there is no rebuttal. All right, then. Counsel, please begin.
Good afternoon, Chief Justice Kadish and members of the court, and may it please the court. My name is Joe Reynolds, and I'm here on behalf of the appellant, Adventure Photo Tours. Can the tax department bar a taxpayer from the courthouse door in independent judicial review based on that taxpayer's inability to pay a contested tax debt? That is the threshold question that I submit is before the court today. The tax department invoked NRS 360.395 as a barrier to the judiciary. It did so without notice to Adventure Photo. It did so without an opportunity to be heard. And neither the statute on its face or as applied to this case provide any good faith safety valve or exception or consideration of the taxpayer's inability to pay that tax debt. It is Adventure Photo's position that the statute violates the Due Process Clause, that it also violates the Equal Protection Clause, and that it also independently violates the Nevada Taxpayer Bill of Rights, and that we are asking that this court, at a minimum, reverse the dismissal of the district court in this case. There are 5 baseline facts that I think is important to guide this court's analysis. First is Adventure Photo timely availed itself of administrative procedures, timely filed its petition for judicial review. Adventure Photo has been paying prospectively the tax that was imposed and determined by the tax department while this matter has been proceeding. So really the issue is the back taxes owed, approximately $270,000. Nowhere in the record does it show that the tax department provided any notice whatsoever of the applicability of NRS 360.395. Adventure Photo's owner, it's a family-owned business, submitted an affidavit in the record before the district court regarding its inability to pay. It was a notarized affidavit in that if forced to pay the entire deficiency determination, it would face bankruptcy.
What about being allowed installments?
Justice Perigary, that was never offered. And
is it something that it was available and they didn't seek?
Well, I think that question partly needs to be looked at through the lens of the Taxpayer Bill of Rights. And, you know, goes back to McCullough versus Maryland, the power to tax is the power to destroy. And so the Nevada legislature has placed specific and affirmative duties on the tax department above and beyond other agencies.
So you think they're required to reach out to your client and say, hey, would you like a payment plan, instead of you asking your client asking them for one?
Yes.
And based on what?
The Taxpayer Bill of Rights.
What specific provision requires that?
It is in NRS Chapter 360. I can give the more specific cite, but it is cited to our brief that requires the Department of Taxation to treat all taxpayers fairly, to treat taxpayers with common sense, to provide notice, to provide written instructions on how to avail themselves of the rights. And that is cited, Chief Justice Kadish, in our brief. And so it is our position that there is a duty of the tax department to provide notice to a taxpayer in this case. And that did not occur, and there's nothing in the record to show that it did. That is something that's distinguishable from this court's 2007 opinion, a Silver State Electric Supply. In Silver State, this court did review NRS 360.395. And it denied.
Actually, before you move on, if I appreciate your position is there's no notice. If they had provided notice, just as an abstract principle, does the fact of the availability of a payment plan then satisfy the concerns?
Justice Stiglitz, that question was, the Adventure Photo was never even able to reach that issue in this case, that there was no offer of a payment plan. And in looking in the first argument that we raise in our brief, when looking at the underlying violation was NRS Chapter 372B, which was enacted nearly 20 years after NRS Chapter 360. That was the statute in the judicial review procedures that Adventure Photo proceeded upon. And with respect to the notice, the tax department in denying relief at the administrative level stated, you may be entitled to judicial review of the decision as set forth in NRS 233B130. It directed Adventure Photo, again, NRS 233B, as a governing statutory law with respect to its judicial review procedures.
Isn't your client charged with notice of what the applicable law is?
Well, Chief Justice Kadish, in a general sense, we can say everybody's on notice to always comply with all laws on the books, and there's thousands and thousands of laws. And I think that goes back to my previous answer, is we do have a taxpayer bill of rights to especially avoid this type of gotcha scenario, in that when we're dealing with tax penalties and tax liabilities, special obligations and special considerations fall upon the tax department to make sure that taxpayers are fully informed of their rights. And when you look at NRS 372B, it does not specifically refer to NRS Chapter 360.395. There is a general reference that provisions of NRS Chapter 360 will apply to the extent that they're not in conflict with 372B, but then that statutory provision goes to enumerate those instances or those areas of NRS Chapter 360 that are covered and judicial review is not included. And so there is a reasonable construction based upon the tax department's direction that NRS Chapter 233B applies, the absence of specific reference to this requirement in NRS Chapter 372B to conclude that it's not applicable.
Let's talk more generally about your arguments that there's a due process or equal protection violation by requiring a corporation that owes taxes to pay the disputed tax to go ahead and litigate that in the court, because there's U.S. Supreme Court cases, multiple cases, that say that absent a fundamental right at issue, such as a parental right or right to get a divorce, that you don't necessarily have a due process right that would overcome a filing fee requirement. So can you address that?
Yes, thank you. We are asserting, and unlike the Silver State case, that there is a fundamental right at issue in this place, and that is access to the court system. And that is also coupled with...
Is that under the U.S. Constitution?
This court has recognized a right, at least a limited right, to access to the courts. The United States Supreme Court in Rounds v. Smith has recognized a right to access to the courts. And here, that...
Well, the U.S. Supreme Court counsel has held that it was okay to require a bankruptcy filing fee to file for bankruptcy, and it's upheld a filing fee to challenge a welfare decision against a due process and equal protection challenge.
In this case, Your Honor, you have to look at, or I submit that for the court to look at, the aspect of wealth as it's coupled with a right of access to the courts. In that, while wealth in and of itself, courts have been reluctant to hold as a suspect or heightened classification, California Supreme Court has recognized that wealth, when intertwined with a fundamental right, such as the right to vote, and here our submission is with the right of access to the courts, does become heightened. In that we cannot allow taxpayers with financial means who can afford to pay a tax debt the ability to move forward in judicial review, and those that can't being unable to do so.
So are you asking us to find that wealth is a suspect classification, although the U.S. Supreme Court has said it's not?
Not in isolation, Your Honor, but in coupled with the right of access to court, yes.
So then are you relying on the Nevada Constitution rather than the U.S. Constitution? Because we're bound by this U.S. Supreme Court on interpreting the U.S. Constitution.
We've asserted our challenge under both, Your Honor, both the Nevada Constitution and the U.S. Constitution.
So are you arguing that there is a broader or a different protection under equal protection under the Nevada Constitution as it relates to a wealth classification?
Yes, Your Honor, and that there at least should be recognized within the context of an access to the court system. I'm not advocating for a wealth to be elevated to a suspect classification in and of itself or in isolation, but when your financial ability to pay intersects with your ability to seek independent judicial review, heightened scrutiny should apply, in that the tax department should be required to show that there is a compelling interest at stake and that the prohibition in NRS 360-395 is narrowly tailored.
Let me just ask you this, and then I'm sorry I'm monopolizing, but under the Barnes versus 8th Judicial District Court case, one of our cases, this court from 1987, we held... The states are free to restrict the right of an indigent to a waiver of filing fees as long as the case does not implicate a fundamental interest and the litigant has some alternative course of action that is not conditioned on the payment of a fee. Is that dispositive here?
No, Your Honor, I submit that it's not. And what I point the court to is the Texas Supreme Court in the Lal case. And what is missing from NRS 360-395 is any type of mechanism for a taxpayer who cannot afford to pay to submit to the district court to make a good faith determination of their inability to pay and to allow their judicial review to move forward.
How do you square Lal, though, because Texas's constitution is a little different in terms of open court provisions with Nevada's constitution or the U.S. Constitution?
It is worded differently, Justice Herndon, but I think the underlying principle of the open court constitutional provision in law is analogous to Article 1, Section 8 of our due process provision in the Nevada Constitution. And that in Texas, an analogous type statute has been upheld, but where there is an ability to seek independent review on the indigency status or the financial ability to pay, and where NRS 360-395 fails is it has no safety valve, no indigency mechanism. And that is at the core is our argument. And that even under rational basis, it fails.
But doesn't that kind of tie back into where we started with Justice Perry's question about under the statute, there's the ability to sign an agreement with an agreement to pay later, not have to pay the tax amount up front. And so when you're talking about there's no mechanism for indigency, even if we were to say law in Texas' constitution is somehow analogous here, there appears to be a mechanism in our law statutorily that allows somebody to not have to pay that amount up front and still get access to the courts.
Justice Herndon, whether I'm unable to pay now or I'm unable to pay at the conclusion of the proceeding, at the end of the day, makes no practical difference that the taxpayer is still unable to pay. And so having that requirement in of itself.
But the argument is I couldn't get the judge to hear my petition for judicial review because I haven't paid, as opposed to I've executed an agreement to pay at a later date, and then I can go to the district court and get my judicial review. I get from your client's perspective that maybe, I don't know if I'm ever going to be able to pay, but in terms of access to the court, there's a mechanism to get there without paying up front.
Respectfully submit that still falls short. Just the requirement that in entering to a written agreement still falls short because it's compelling entering into an agreement that you're going to pay something that you know at least at the time you cannot pay. And so to the extent that NRS 363.95, you know, the underlying purpose is to ensure that the court system is not used to avoid paying a tax liability, and that there are mechanisms by which the tax department can recover those funds.
Do you want to reserve the rest of your time?
I do, Your Honor. Okay. That is not this case, and I will reserve the remainder. Thank you.
Okay. Good afternoon, Madam Chief Justice, members of the court. I'm Jessica Whalen, Deputy Solicitor General, here on behalf of respondents, the Nevada Tax Commission, and the Department of Taxation. May it please the court. This case concerns a very narrow issue, specifically whether NRS 360.395 applies to this case, and if so, whether the statute is constitutional as applied. The district court answered both of these questions in the affirmative, and this court should affirm. First, I want to address the contention that there was no notice of the payment plan option or the applicability of NRS 360.395. In fact, there was a document attached to the original notice of tax deficiency that the department sent to Adventure Photo Tours, and that's found in the record at page 44. It's actually found multiple times in the record, but that's one place the court could look. So Adventure Photo Tours was noticed that 360.395 would apply to it. I also want to point out that Adventure Photo Tours is a sophisticated business entity. It is charged, as Chief Justice Kadish referenced, it is charged with knowledge of the laws and regulations that govern it in the transportation industry. And with respect to requesting a payment plan, there are actually forms on the department's website. It's no secret that this is an option for taxpayers who are unable to pay a determination.
What about, I think it was in the briefing that, what's that?
2 minutes.
Oh.
14 more seconds. Next, there was a lot of talk about the equal protection question, and I want to first note that this argument was waived for failure to raise it in the district court. That's conceded by Adventure Photo Tours at page 37 of its opening brief. And while this court can address sua sponte constitutional issues, the Malecon Tobacco case says that when you have an as-applied challenge like we do here, that's largely fact-dependent, the district court is best equipped to handle that in the first instance. So this court should refrain from addressing the equal protection issue. If it were to consider the equal protection issue, however, Under Silver State Electric, which is controlling precedent here, NRS 360-395 has been held to comport with equal protection. And as this court knows, it's reluctant to overturn precedent except in compelling cases, and this is not such a case.
Okay, now going back. back to 360 and the payment plans, and they were on the website, but there was a point made in the briefing that if the amount that you owe is over and above $50,000, then it becomes entirely discretionary with the commission as to whether or not, or the department, whether or not payments would be offered. Can you explore that? I'm not sure I understand that fully.
You know, it would be up to the department on whether a payment plan is acceptable. However, the administrative code has pretty light requirements generally. An agreement for a payment plan has to be in writing. There has to be a personal guarantee by a responsible party, and it has to include the initial payment with the proposed written agreement. So the administrative requirements are not onerous. There's also a provision in the code at NAC 360-450 that allows the department to enter into a plan with the taxpayer, quote, upon the request of a taxpayer. So it is incumbent on the taxpayer to propose the plan, meet those three simple requirements, and then up to the department whether to accept it. I think the bottom line here is the taxpayer didn't even try.
So I want to make sure my understanding is correct and how I think this might play out, because Mr. Reynolds was expressing a very valid concern that, well, if I can't pay it now and I can't pay it later, it's really a distinction without meaning. But my point was, entering into the written agreement gets you the opportunity to go to court on your PJR. Yes?
Yes.
If the judge grants your PJR, would you agree that your written agreement becomes void at that point, if they've granted a PJR that you shouldn't have been taxed in the way that you were?
Correct. And if
you don't know anything at that point. Maybe you're entitled to a refund of that initial installment you paid, yes?
Yes. Okay. And there are provisions in the code and the NRS to obtain such a refund, and the department would have to make that refund to the taxpayer.
Obviously, if the judge denies your PJR, then you're back to being responsible for paying what the tax commission told you you were supposed to pay, only you have it on some type of installment plan or deferral of some sort.
Correct.
Okay.
So doesn't that put the department in some degree, though, in control of who gets to file a petition and who doesn't?
In a sense, yes, but I also want to point out that there's multiple layers of process afforded to a taxpayer before we even get to the petition for judicial review. So what happened here and what happens in these types of tax deficiency cases is that an audit's conducted. There's a notice of tax deficiency sent to the taxpayer. The first level of process is that the taxpayer can petition for a redetermination from the department. That happened here. If they're unsatisfied, the taxpayer can then go before an administrative law judge, make their arguments, and that happened here. If they're unsatisfied with that, they can appeal to the Nevada Tax Commission. All three of these things happen without there being any requirement for a filing fee, for prepayment, and this type of sort of prepayment process has been held to comport with due process in the Fendler case out of the Ninth Circuit, and other U.S. Supreme Court cases that are cited in our answering brief, I believe on page 12. So even though, yes, the department would be in control of who can enter into this type of payment plan, the taxpayer has been afforded multiple layers of process before even getting to that point.
The courts, they'd either have to have the money for the first installment, presuming that the department even accepts the payment plan.
Yes, that is true. Now, I want to address one argument that was made in the briefing, which kind of cuts against the argument that, hey, we don't have the financial ability to make these payments. And that is that Adventure Photo Tours made the prospective payments for the years 2020 and 2021, maybe 2022.
But so, those were coming out of the fares that they were collecting.
Correct, yes.
Not like having to come up with a gob of cash.
That is true. However, they could have applied at least some of that to the retroactive determination that was owed. Instead, they make the argument that if 360.395 applies, that they've satisfied 360.395 in some way by making these prospective payments. And quite frankly, that's a bit of a red herring and a little illogical to say that, well, I've paid prospective amounts, that satisfies my requirement to pay these past amounts due.
The deficiency that was determined is for those prior years, and none of that has been paid to date.
Correct. Correct. Determination is a term of art in the tax statutes, and it means the retroactive amounts that are due. I want to talk a little bit about the Texas case law that was addressed. Adventure Photo Tours relies on two cases out of Texas, EBS Solutions and the Law case. First off, as this court knows, that's out-of-state precedent. It's not binding on this court, and its persuasive value is severely limited because those cases analyzed a tax provision under the open courts, a very specific open courts provision of the Texas Constitution to which Nevada has no analog. But that notwithstanding, if you look at the EBS Solutions case, it actually undercuts Adventure Photo Tours' argument because there was an alternative for a taxpayer that was unable to pay, and that would be filing like an affidavit of inability to pay, going before the court, and getting that requirement waived. Very similar here, I think, to the option to enter into a payment plan.
Well, except that there, it's the court making the decision, not one of the parties.
That is true. That is one distinction between the two different provisions. Now, Law is arguably the only case that really supports the due process arguments made by Adventure Photo Tours. That case should be further disregarded because there the taxpayer didn't even invoke the inability to pay exception, and the Texas legislature came back like 8 months later to amend the statute and remove the constitutionally infirm provision. So there's not much more analysis on Law after it was decided.
How would you respond to your opposing counsel relies heavily, and especially in their briefing, on the body case from the U.S. Supreme Court and that line of cases regarding a due process right and filing with the court and preventing filing fees becoming an obstacle. Would you address that and why you don't think that's binding on us or why it doesn't control here?
Sure. So I think there's other U.S. Supreme Court case law that more in the realm of taxation that applies a little more clearly. One case is Dodge v. Osborne, 240 U.S. 118. This is a case involving income tax where there was a prepayment requirement to be able to appeal to the commissioner of the Internal Revenue Service. The court there said, we think it suffices to state the contention to demonstrate its entire want of merit. There's another case, U.S. Supreme Court case, Phillips v. Commissioner. This case, that's 283 U.S. 589, dealing with income and profits tax, where the U.S. Supreme Court found due process satisfied because there were alternative methods of eventual judicial review, including making payment and then suing for the recovery. So I think while there's an analogy between filing fees, if you look at the cases specifically on prepayment of taxes, it's been consistently upheld by every court to address it except for the Law Court in Texas. I think the last thing I want to state is just that under the prerequisite for judicial review statutes, this court has recognized time and again that strict compliance is required, that the right for a review of an administrative decision only exists where the legislature provides it, and therefore it needs to be followed strictly. Here, Adventure Photo Tours did not make prepayment. They didn't enter into a payment plan, nor even attempt to. And therefore, the district court and this court have really no jurisdiction to determine the merits of the petition for judicial review. With that, if there are no further questions, I'd ask this court to affirm.
Can you address one thing for me just briefly, the potential conflict with 372B and 49 U.S.C. 14505?
Sure. So that's the Supremacy Clause preemption argument that's made. I guess the first thing I'd say about that was included in Adventure Photo Tours' response to the motion to dismiss. Adventure Photo Tours did not ask the court to consider the merits. They simply presented that as, hey, we have a compelling underlying claim. That being said, I don't think that there's any conflict there because 49 U.S.C. 14505 deals with or says that states can't tax the actual transportation in interstate commerce of a passenger. Here, there's a distinction, and what happened when rideshare companies such as Uber and Lyft started entering the market is states wanted to tax the connection of a company pairing a passenger with a driver, irrespective of whether they were traveling interstate, intrastate. It's the connection between the company, the passenger and the driver willing to transport them. And that's the taxable event. It's the privilege of doing business in Nevada. And for that reason, there's no conflict.
How do you distinguish this from the Aloha Airlines case?
Aloha Airlines dealt with a different statute regarding air travel, first off. Unfortunately, I'm not as familiar with the Aloha Airlines case. I apologize.
It's all right. I guess I'm just really struggling to understand how this isn't a tax on interstate transportation.
Or at least on the gross revenue for it.
Understood. If that is an issue that the court is interested in undertaking, I would submit that, to borrow some verbiage from the U.S. Supreme Court, this case is not the proper vehicle to do it because we have the jurisdictional defects that rob this court and the district court of jurisdiction. Thank you.
Thank you.
May it please the court, Joe Reynolds. Chief Justice Gatish, to answer your earlier question about the Taxpayer Bill of Rights, it's NRS 360.291, subsection 1, subsection D, where the legislature finds that the tax department has an obligation to provide written explanations of common errors, oversights, and violations, the taxpayer's experience, and instructions on how to avoid such problems. The tax department also has an obligation to provide a taxpayer in writing whenever an officer, employer, and agent determines that a taxpayer is entitled to an exemption or has been taxed or assessed more than is required by law. In subsection F, to written instructions indicating how the taxpayer may petition, and it lists for several criteria, a reduction or release in bond or other form of security required to be furnished pursuant to these provisions. With respect to any representation, if I was incorrect with the record in terms of any citation regarding 360.395 as referenced by my co-counsel, I certainly stand corrected. I've looked multiple times and couldn't find some, but if I err on that, it doesn't change our argument.
Okay. Thank you, counsel. This matter will...